Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Welcome back, my friends, once again to another Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 79 for January the 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through all this magical world of computers, networks, all things connected, fiber optics, Cat 6, Cat 5, Windows Server, as well as every now and then, if I can throw it in there. We might even throw in there once in a while a little bit of Apple Server, which we don't use very much anymore, and a little bit of Linux. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Check us out at techpodcast.com. We're also syndicated across stitcher.com. This is a place where you can pick up this show and many, many other podcasts, many podcasts by means of podcasting, you know, in general, just about any topic you can possibly think of. You can download the Stitcher app on your smartphone today. Folks, please check out this website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows, and I hope that you do. You can also leave me a voice message at 724-701-0550. If you have any questions of or ideas for future shows, I would love to hear from you. It really helps me to pull these shows together. And you can email those to me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, and as at Technoman. Tonight we're trying something just a little bit different here. We are actually broadcasting this live and in living color. And we're broadcasting this actually over Vaughn Live. Now, if you've never seen VaughnLive.tv, there's tons of topics and shows you can watch on there. And I think, you know, I'm trying it out tonight because I'm trying to get it ready for my Sunday shows on photography. So I wanted to try it out. I found there's a recording feature on here that automatically records as I broadcast, so I can record the HD video content, I hope. And that's what I'm working on here, so I can get these shows back up on YouTube for you guys and girls out there that like to kind of watch the podcast happening live and get to see me. And you can comment on the YouTube videos also at 42 Technoman. So we'll see how that works out. I want to start off tonight by talking a little bit about, we want to begin our conversation about Microsoft is no longer selling Windows 7. Now, did you hear this happening? It happened last Friday. That was the cutoff date. So you can no longer buy Windows 7. And I guess you could probably still find it maybe on eBay. There's probably some copies out there floating around somewhere. But the OEMs, they're just not selling it anymore. It's an OEM copy that you can load. Now, they are going to continue support for Windows 7 for the next 5 years. So for the next 5 years, you'll be able to buy Windows 7. And that's a good thing, right? So you can pick up Windows 7. Well, you can't pick it up, but you'll have support for 5 years. This brings up a little bit of a topic of discussion in itself. And, you know, we've talked about it many times at work. I've talked about it with many, many clients. Is should you be upgrading your computers now to be Windows 8.1? I mean, would 8.1 be something that you'd want to upgrade your computers to? Well, you know, I look at it, Windows 8.1 is a huge, huge learning curve the way it sits right now. You know, should we maybe just keep Windows 7 on your computers until Windows 10 comes out? Because, you know, historically with Microsoft, and we've seen this over many, many decades since I've been working with Windows. I started back with Windows version, I think it was 1.1 or 1.2, whatever that. The initial Windows came out was 1.0, and it was horrible. Most guys I know still worked in the DOS prompt and used the DOS commands for stuff. So it has to be, so Windows 1.2 or whatever it was I started with, or 1.3, wherever that was. And then what happened historically with Microsoft is every other version is not that great, right? Does anybody remember the Millennium Edition before XP? Remember Millennium? Now, Millennium was created because they needed something to sell until they had XP ready to go to market. So I thought, let's just throw this out there really quickly. And it damaged the overall company. It damaged the reputation to the point where people started looking at it and saying, well, you know, it's not that great. Maybe we should look for another operating system and not use Windows. Well, then Windows XP came along. It was solid, rock solid, really, really good. Later on, you know, we picked up, what was the next one, like Windows Vista, and it was really a mess. And we had a lot of trouble with Windows Vista. And you know how the story goes. I mean, so, and Windows XP was solid, man, right? Windows XP, and I'm sure many of you are probably still running it. I hope you're not, because we know that Windows XP support is long gone, and you're not going to be able to support those systems anymore. And the hack is also long gone. Remember, you could hack the registry and make your Windows XP box think that it's an ATM machine? Well, you can't do that anymore either. So that's something to think about. You can't do that anymore with Windows XP. So upgrade your boxes. You know, maybe you have still have Windows 7 around your offices. You can still have licensing for that, and it will still activate. They're just not selling any new copies. So, you know, Windows 8 came out, and everybody went, oh, my, this is horrible. So they went and they created Windows 8.1, just a big major update, which is almost a major rewrite of a lot of the interface and some of the back end. Well, that software, you know, it be it as it may, Windows 8.1, I mean, we have it on a few computers. I have it on a couple of laptops here at home that I play with it on, just to understand it, know it, because I still get clients that call that buy new computers that have Windows 8.1. So I have to know how to interact with it, know where the icons are, know how to get into the control panel, and, you know, all that stuff that we do as technologists. But you may want to wait, and I hear there's a big announcement coming up here in a few weeks, so maybe Windows 10 is maybe ready to be released. I hope they don't release it too soon. I think if they release it too soon, then I think they're going to take away something from everybody waiting for this, you know, this all-knowing, this all-fixed. So maybe Windows 8 and 8.1 will go down in history as another Vista or another Millennium Edition. I don't know. Quite possible that could happen. And, you know, in all possibilities. I'd like to hear your feedback, though. You know, if you can just call that number, 724-701-0550, leave me a voice message or email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Say, look, we're still running Windows XP, and I want to know why. Why are you still running XP? Are you still running Windows Server 2003? Because we know that support just ended, and now you're leaving yourself hang out there in the middle of nowhere land going, man, I hope nobody attacks my systems. So that's something you might want to look at and take a little note upon, just to see how it is coming along and make sure everything is running okay. If you notice me, if you're looking at the live show here and you notice I'm looking to the left every now and then, I'm just watching my stream go out just to make sure it's holding up, and it seems to be doing okay. We're more worried at this point about the podcast, so we are recording this for the podcast network and for, you know, the Tech Podcast Network, techpodcast.com. And it's also going up on iTunes and on my website, tipsfromserverroom.com. So tonight I thought we would talk about, I always look for interesting topics, and I think I found an interesting topic that everybody would be interested in, obviously, and it's called Windows Server 2012 Storage Spaces. Did you hear about this? Storage Spaces. In doing some research, I wanted to learn, you know, what Windows is doing and what Server is doing in 2012 and what it's giving us that we didn't already have. Well, apparently the storage spaces is something, you know, coming around, and it's pretty new. So let's go ahead and get into tonight's topic of discussion. The core file system capabilities in Windows Server have not changed radically since the earliest version of Windows NT. Anybody remember Windows NT? Very rock solid operating system. I ran my whole internet business I started with Windows NT 3.5. And then when we sold our company, we were running Windows NT 4.0. So it was rock solid. It did everything we needed to do, because we used the RAS, the remote access services, and that's how we authenticated everybody across our modems to get into our internet service. So it was rock solid. Well, then there was Windows Server 2000, and that introduced dynamic disks. There have been more improvements to NTFS reliability and performance. File services have had incremental changes, as has the file sharing server message block, SMB protocol. Now, if you think about SMB, SMB protocol is seen a lot where, do you know? We use it a lot with the Unix backend. Now, the Unix backend is on the Macs. So on the Macs, if we're going to map a server drive to somebody's laptop, we have to do an SMB :// That's how we get into those. So we use the SMB protocol. But there's been nothing new groundbreaking. File Server Resource Manager, FSRM, added capabilities around screening, quotas, reporting, and classification. But it didn't change the core capabilities of the file system or how file services are used. Let's back up a minute. How many of you out there are using file quotas? I talked to a director from another school district, and we were discussing this, and he says some of his teachers are housing 10 gigabytes of data on their servers. That is unrealistic. You should not allow that to happen, and I'll tell you why. Because they're using backup services from, I believe they're using backup services from Barracuda. They have to upload that user's 10 gigs of data every night. And he says his backup server is full. No lie. Really? So I told him that I wrote a script some time ago. And what my script simply does is it simply takes the server and it looks through all the user files at night. It goes through each user file every night. And when it does that, it sees what's in that folder and it strips out stuff like MP3s, movie files, MP4s. EXEs, everything that shouldn't be in there outside of working documents. And working documents is like DOCs, DOCXs, Excel files, PowerPoint presentations. That stuff's okay. We don't mind backing up because they're relatively small. Now, sometimes we do have folks that make those very large because they insert a lot of graphics or they may insert some video in that. So that might be something to look at. Also, if any of your users, I know in the education realm, users or, you know, a lot of the teachers in the education realm will download videos to use in their class. And I say, look, you don't need those backed up. If you keep those, tell your users if they have any very large files that they know they can download or find again, keep those on their C drive, just on their local computer. That way you, as the tech administrator, don't have to worry about backing that stuff up. So that is where quotas come in really handy. If you need to turn it on, turn it on. It's critical if you need it. Now, when I think of file servers, I think of a server on which to store your Microsoft Word and PowerPoint documents. If this server needs to be highly available, it can be clustered. I don't know how many of you have clusters out there. I know we do not. With one server at a time offering the file share. Volumes with fault tolerance can be created on dynamic disks when using Windows mirroring, RAID 1, or striping with parity is RAID 5 capabilities. And I did a show a while back on the different RAID systems, and one of our viewers actually emailed me and talked about RAID 10. RAID 10 needs twice the amount of disks, but it's twice safe. It's more safe than RAID 5. Now, however, IT administrators must manually perform both the selection of disks and any repair actions. Furthermore, more advanced features such as thin provisioning of storage and the easy addition of more storage to a pool in which volumes can be created just aren't possible without the use of separate SAN or NAS devices. So SAN is storage attached network devices, or NAS, network attached storage devices. But this changed in the next version of Windows Server, Windows Server 2008. Did you know Windows Server 2008 was formerly codenamed Windows Server 8? And let me give you a little backstory there. In putting a couple Windows 8 computers on your network, we have found that the only way to interact with those through group policies and lock certain areas down is to have a Windows Server 2012 in your rack. Because Server 2012 naturally has policies that allow you to control Windows 8 because they came out about the same time, so that makes sense. You can't do it with Windows Server 2008. You can still lock down things, but there's some stuff like the desktop you can't interact with. You can't interact with whatever they're calling the interface these days. I still refer to it as Metro. I know they got sued over that, but that's kind of where I refer to it as. But you can lock that down if you have Server 2012. So if you're going to be rolling out, we talked earlier about Windows 7 not being sold. So if you're looking at Windows 8 and you do use group policy management to manage those computers, then you're going to have to put a Server 2012 in your back end. Probably as your domain controller would be a good place to put that. And remember, a few weeks ago we talked about migrating. So you can migrate your 2008 server to 2012. It's really hard to migrate a 2003 server to 2012. You can do it, but I think there's some issues there you got to worry about. Let's talk a little bit about using storage spaces. As an IT administrator or even an end user, you often need storage that might sometimes require fault tolerance. Other times, you just need to be able to store information that is protected in another way. You can open the Disk Management Microsoft Management Console, MMC, snap in, examine the physical disk, convert them to a dynamic disk if necessary, and then you can create a volume that meets your requirements. If the volume needs grow, you might be able to also extend it, depending on the physical disks. But you can't add additional disks to an existing volume to provide easy scalability. Now, for small and mid-sized organizations, or even large organizations with smaller remote locations, with just a couple servers, for which either a SAN or a NAS is economical. Providing a good storage solution for service is a huge problem. At the end of the scale, power users on desktops are struggling to organize their data across internal drives and USB connected disks. I have a very, very large problem with internal connected disks and USB drives and USB thumb drives. What I have a problem with that is, if you're working for a company, you have what's known as intellectual data. Intellectual data, nobody really understands that. But to me, the pure and simple definition of intellectual data is just that when your worker, let's say you're running, I always say a CAD lab because CAD, or maybe you're in finances. When that worker creates something for your company, okay? So when that worker creates something for your company, that property is the intellectual data of that business, of your business. If it's a CAD company, if you're creating CAD drawings, you don't want those on somebody's thumb drive, them pulling out the thumb drive and walking out your door with it. You just don't want that to happen. So in that instance, you want to make sure that that is saved on your servers, because then you have control of it. You can set permissions to it. And most of all, more importantly, you can back those up. So yeah, the power users out there will try to save stuff on the C drive. I do recommend that you set your group policies up to not allow them to save on their local drive, period. And it's just going to make your life a lot easier in the end one day, believe me. Okay, so storage spaces is a new feature in Server 2012 and the Windows 8 clients. This feature enables a completely new way to think about the administrative storage. With storage spaces, the physical disk that provides underlying data storage are completely abstract from the process of requesting new volumes, known as now spaces. The storage space technology automatically performs any necessary actions to restore data redundancy if a disk fails, provided that significant physical disks are available. This brings up one of those topics or one of those questions that physical disks are available. Folks, storage is so inexpensive nowadays. It's just so inexpensive that you can add more and more storage. I would suggest to put an array in, either like Oracle servers for arrays or Dell servers make really nice SAN or NAS units for an array. You put those in there. I would suggest to use SAS drives. SAS drives, I think they run at 20,000 RPM. They are amazingly fast, but that will give you enough area for fault tolerance. That's what you're looking for. Now, other technologies such as Microsoft BitLocker drive encryption can also be used with storage spaces. Now, I brought this topic up to somebody once. I said, can I encrypt my files on a server? And I was told, look, Jack, you don't want to do that because if you do, it's going to create such an overhead on the I/O and the disk write time, the input output or the disk write time, that you're going to either fry the disk or fry the server, or you're going to slow down the read write time so drastically that the server's going to become unusable. Well, it looks like I think they're kind of working towards that area now, because it says Microsoft BitLocker drive encryption can also be used with storage spaces being on your server. That's huge. For so long, I've been told that we have to encrypt our data. We have to trust our users to encrypt data. So if you work in the medical field, under HIPAA compliance laws, it says the data must be encrypted. So to have your user go in and encrypt that data every night before they save it to the server and then decrypt it when they have to use it back on their workstation, you're asking a user for a lot. Remember, I told you a long time ago when I started this podcast, I like doing these podcasts for one thing. It's called the user experience. Whatever we do on the back end in our server rooms creates a better atmosphere for our users. You don't have to always look like the hero. You don't always have to be the best buddy. I know a lot of companies that block things like social media and all this stuff in companies. And they do that because they feel that it increases productivity, where actually, in all reality, you're decreasing productivity. And you may say why. Very simply. Because what happens is, and I'm going to show you, since you know we have a few live folks here tonight. So if your productivity, they're working on CatLab, and they pull out their smartphone, and they start looking at Facebook and checking their status updates on Twitter, well, what's going to happen? You're exactly right. Their productivity just went down the tubes because they're doing this since they're looking at the computer screen. So I understand why companies block that, but you don't need to. Anyway, let's move on. So with the storage spaces, we know that when a new storage pool is created, the disks that are added to the storage pool disappear from the disk management MMC. The disks are now virtualized and used exclusively by the storage space technology. You can see that the disk state in the storage pool view in file and storage services in Server Manager on a Windows 8 server, Windows 2012 server, or by using the storage space's control panel applet on a Windows 8 client. You can see now where I told you before that the Windows 8, the clients, and the Windows 8 client and Windows 2012 server work so good together. You won't find this client on Windows 7, okay? It's just not there. Now, basically, we're focusing on storage spaces on the server with Server Manager and Windows PowerShell, but all the features that are available are also available on the client. The only difference is that on the clients, the storage spaces applet, instead of Server Manager, is used for management. So on the Windows 8 computer, it will be called Storage Spaces, where on Windows Server 2012, we know it's called Server Manager. Now, Storage Spaces introduce a feature that was previously available only when using external storage solutions such as a SAN or a NAS device. The ability to thin provision storage. During the creation of a virtual disk, you have two options. The first is to create a disk as fixed, meaning that all the space for the size of the virtual disk is allocated during its creation. The second is to create a disk as thin, meaning that space is taken from the pool only as it's needed. And you probably understand thin because when you create virtual servers, or when you create the virtual hard drive, I should say, we always set this up basically to be thin. So what that's telling the server is, as I need more space, just allocate more space from the overall storage. If you make it just a straight disk, if you create a fixed disk, and that's just saying that as that disk grows or as things are stored on there, the disk becomes full, and then all of a sudden there's no more writing going on because there's no more space. I would highly recommend, in my line of view, that all of your file servers, anything you use as a file server, should be set up as a thin hard drive, or thin because it can expand as needed. Now, using a thin provision disk, you can create a virtual disk that is much larger than your actual available storage. Now, these capabilities don't mean that you can store more data in the thinly provisioned disk than is actually allocated to the pool, but the volumes typically fill up over time. Now think about this. I might create a 10 terabyte thin disk that initially only has 1 terabyte of associated physical storage. As the amount of data increases and approaches 1 terabyte, I can add another 1 terabyte of physical storage to the pool simply by adding more disks. This is one of those long-term things that we talk about. This is one of those, the proactive versus the reactive. I stress this so much because we tried this with our networks. The proactive point is you know that your file servers are going to grow. I have an understanding with my company, and I tell them, there's a couple things we'll never do. We'll never use less storage. We'll never use less backup space. And we'll never use less bandwidth. And as it's getting today, we'll never use less computers than we have this year. We'll have more next year. So you have to, as you add more and more and more computers, more and more and more users to your network, you're going to have to create bigger and bigger volumes. But you as a technologist have to look into your crystal ball, and we have to look in and gaze in the crystal ball and try to see the future. It's very hard. And I'm not saying, hey, set up a server with, 1 petaflop thin drive. I mean, you could do it, and I'm not telling you to do that. Be realistic. 10 terabytes is a lot of storage. A lot of our storage devices now, I know our backup servers now are running 4 terabytes, and they can't be increased. The only way to increase those is to buy new servers for backup servers. But on your physical servers and your NAS box, you could buy one with multiple bays in it. And as that pool gets used up, you can add more drives. What this does is this saves us overall. It saves us with laying out all this money that we have to lay out initially to buy this equipment. You can buy a rack with maybe, a NAS with maybe 2 drives in it, maybe 2 terabytes to start. Then provision it out to 10 terabytes, knowing that you can add, 8 more drives or 8 more 1 terabyte drives and have 10 overall. So it's a really, really nice way to do it. But, use caution and carry on with that task, because it's hard to look into that crystal ball over time. Now, as long as I add physical disks before the virtual disk fills, there's never an issue. Alerts can be generated to notify me that the storage pool is reaching its threshold. This is huge. I suggest that you go in and look at your alerts. A lot of people don't realize that your events, you can set alert messages up on your servers. Hey, if the server is getting full, if this hard drive is getting filled up, send me an email. Let me know. And you can set it up to say, look, if I have this provision to 10 and I only have 2 terabytes of storage in our scenario that we've been working with, then that 2 terabytes of storage, we just say, hey, look, this is what's going to happen. Over time, we are going to say that if this is, if we have 500 gigabyte left, that would probably be when I want the alert message. Why 500 gig? I mean, that's still a lot of room, because I know then that I can make my phone calls. I can order more hard drives and have them ready to put in before I hit that max. So that's why I want to be sure that I have that alert set up. Now, when you create a virtual disk, all you need to know is which size pool to create the disk. So that's important. No knowledge of physical disks is required, or even openly available. The point of storage space is to create virtual disks as needed. This is huge, because we've always created virtual disks, load the operating system on, and that's what you get, right? It's nice now to know that we can expand upon that with Windows Server 2012. Now, a powerful storage solution If you're asked me to describe storage spaces in five words or fewer, it would be a poor man's SAN. But if I tried to demonstrate the storage space's functionality combined with the in-box iSCSI and SMB 2.2 actually provides a very powerful storage solution for servers and desktops alike. This isn't a poor man's anything, but rather a very powerful storage platform. When other technologies, such as new data dictation feature or duplication feature, are also considered. So the use case for the Windows File Services platform explode. Going forward, many organizations can start using Windows server-based file servers as a first-class storage citizen. So I know that's a real mouthful, but you know what? We don't want it to be a poor man's SAN. We want it to be a proactive IT director's thought process to enact this storage solution and start embracing it, because it's a lot better. And I had to do this in the past so many times. And I'll tell you a little story from the trenches. I mean, we seem to get into those every now and then. But so one time with a client software, what we had was we set the client's server up. And we set up the file server on the same domain controller. It was a small office. We had maybe five clients at the time. Well, they've hired a few people since then. And then what happened was the server starts to become full. And what happens is it got to the point where it was unusable. Naturally, that's what happens. So the old way of doing it, the way I had to do it, was re-provision another virtual drive or rebuild another server. That's actually what we did, was rebuild another server, because they could still get into their software, but they couldn't save any more patient records to their server. That was the problem. There was no more room to write. They could still look up old records, so we had to leave the server available and leave it running. So when I built a new server, made the new domain controller, I did everything that way. We started putting the clients back onto the new one. We had to migrate all their data over to the new server. And instead of a 500 gigabyte server we had then, we put a 3 terabyte server in that we have in there now. But what this is going to allow us to do, and looking into the future, is I can now set up thin provisioning storage and set that up in a way where I can add hard drives. So they call and say, look, Jack, we're not writing anymore. We have an issue. I'll say, fine. I'll just order you 2 more terabytes of hard drives, slide those into their server, and we should be good to go. We can just let those provision themselves in with the storage spaces. So this is huge. This is a big change for Windows Server 2012. This is not something you would ever seen in Windows NT. This is not something you would seen in Windows Server 2003. So if you have that, again, you need to be getting that, migrating that out of your racks. And I know for big companies that have server farms, that's a big task. It's a daunting task to do that. You know, even if you're a small company, if you're a small organization and you have a domain controller that's running Windows Server 2003 and you have no talent in-house to migrate, that's a big task. It takes a lot out of you to do that. But I can tell you this, there's no more support for that. We know that. We know also now that Windows 7 is no longer sold. We know Windows XP no longer has support. And I once had a brilliant technologist. Matter of fact, I talked to him on the show one time. Brilliant technologist, and we were talking about upgrading computers, workstations for a business. And he told me that the company didn't have enough money to go to Windows Server 2012, so he upgraded to Windows Server 2008. But, you know, there's the downside, and I tell everybody this. If you upgrade the old technology, you're going to have to upgrade again sooner. So you might as well bite the bullet, upgrade from 2003 all the way to 2012. And then you don't have to worry about biting that bullet from 2008 and go, hey, boss, you know what? There's no more support for 2008. We got updated to 2012. And he'll say, you just told me that 5 years ago when 2003 went out. And you'll be like, well, boss, you know, Microsoft is. And then you'll have a whole pocket full of excuses that you can use. But we tend not to do that. We bite the bullet, we get the books out, we start installing the new server packages, we learn everything we have to know about it to put it into operations, and we run with it. I don't believe in setting up test environments. I think I've demonstrated that through this show many, many times. We test very little. Sometimes I test client software to make sure it works with the new operating system. But in the end, what happens is you have to upgrade these computers. The workstation has to be upgraded. Now, it might not have to be Windows 8.1 today. You can still be running Windows 7. But if you're running Windows XP because there's a piece of software that a vendor wrote that they're not working on to upgrade it to the new structure of Windows 7 even, then it's not going to work on Windows 8.1. So you need to either do this. You need to reevaluate your software. And we do that a lot in our business, right? We reevaluate the software. And I know we're getting a little bit off task of storage, but from the trenches, this is all relevant. So you tell them that you call that vendor up and say, look, are you going to update your software? If not, we're going with another software company. I guarantee you they're going to start working at rewriting that software and getting it ready for the, because you're not the only one doing this. If this company has, 1,500 end users, clients, using their software and paying them maintenance upgrades and all this, it will pay them dividends to upgrade their software. Because if not, they're going to lose 1,500 clients and you're going to go somewhere else to somebody's software that will work on the new version of Windows, because you know that you can't keep that old version of Windows any longer. So that's just something to think about. So I hope you get all that. I hope you got it. And, you know, it's a big, big problem there, storage. It never will ever be less storage. It just will never happen. We know we always need more storage. And that's just the way life is. So let me wrap by saying just a couple things. First of all, I need your help out there. You know, I need your help in a couple areas. You know, one, it doesn't cost you anything to do this. Call into the show and give me your suggestions or your ideas for storage. I mean, call in and I'll put you on the air. That's what we do here. We put you on the podcast, we'll play it online, and then we'll talk about what you're discussing. 724-701-0550. So call in there. Email me, jackstechcorner@gmail.com. It doesn't cost you anything, and there's never a stupid question. Remember that. Every question is very relevant. Another way you can help me out here and help the show and to help pay for all the bandwidth there, and if you're watching the stream, you notice that we are now streaming in full bright, brilliant HD. And I told my wife all that makes me do is have to shave before every show, but other than that, I'm not going to worry about my hair because I wear headphones most of the time. You can use my Amazon link, though, folks. If you go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com, shut your ad blocker off. I know you have one. Just deactivate it on my domain, on tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Deactivate it on that domain, and then use that Amazon link when you buy anything from Amazon. Anything from computers to cleaning products to diapers to medicines, whatever you buy on Amazon. And a little bit of the proceeds will come back to the show. Nothing, it won't cost you anything more. So it's a very, very simple way to help the show out. And folks, if you want to learn about Windows Server 2012, then I have a great opportunity for you. If you want to learn about Windows Server 2008 R2, another great opportunity for you. Or if you want to learn about VMware ESXi Server 5.5, another great opportunity. I teach you from install to administration on my online classes. If you go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com, look for the online class link at the top of the page, click on that, and the three classes are listed right there. Now, I've had many emails from people out there said, Jack, look, these classes are too inexpensive and they must not be any good. But then I got all the other emails that said, Jack, your classes were great, they are to the point, and they're what I needed to know to get the job done. Some people say, Jack, your classes are great. The certificate you mailed me got me the new job I was looking for, got me the advancement at the company I'm working at. So it's just a really easy way to learn. You watch a simple video and you take a short little quiz, 2 or 3 question quiz. It's very, very easy. A question I often get is, Jack, once I'm done with your course, am I done? I'm locked out. I can never get back. Because a lot of courses do that, right? You have 90 days to complete this course, right? I once looked into taking one of the Windows certification courses with this company. And they said, great, you have 1 year to complete it. There was hundreds and hundreds of videos. And I said, what happens in 1 year if I don't complete it? Oh, well, you're done. You have to repay us money. We're not that way here. You pay one time and you're a lifetime member on the site. You can come back, watch those videos as much as you need be. And I know I get a lot of questions, a lot of people saying, Jack, I could watch this on YouTube and learn it. You can. But the problem with YouTube is not organized into a class structure. These videos are very much class structured, so I'll let you look at that. And, you know, take a shot with me there, and I'm sure you're going to learn something on those courses. Once again, they're self-paced. I do mail your certificate in the end. You can sign up for those at tipsfromserveroom.com. Folks, I hope you have a great work week this week, as every week. And for the few of you that join me on a live show, thank you very much for joining me here. Please give me a follow on Vaughn Live. And I'm going to try to bring these shows live to you each week. We'll see how that goes. And I can't wait to see the recording to see what that looks like and listen to it and see what it might have came out like. So hopefully I'll get that up on YouTube for you. So, folks, thank you so much. Take care, my friends. And until next Tuesday, keep those servers running and check out the storage solutions you have available to you. And I'll talk to you Tuesday. Bye for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.